Welcome to the Empowered Whistleblower Podcast. Are you one of many Americans who are tired of people being bullied and discriminated? You are not alone. Bullying has a rippling effect on the person who is being harassed and everyone associated with the bullied person. The targeted adult or child may have been physically or psychologically bullied. They often bring home their anguish with them, and this can have a crippling effect on everyone associated with the one who's being bullied or discriminated. It's time to shed some light on how to reduce bullying in the school systems, how to create safe and healthy work environments for employees. I blow the whistle on how to protect yourself if you're being bullied and educate listeners on their rights if they're being bullied or discriminated. I bring in the best experts who provide empowering strategies, tips on resiliency, how to handle the experience of being bullied or discriminated, how to heal and overcome the effects of being mistreated. If you are ready to gain knowledge and insights on bullying and discrimination, you are in the right place. Welcome to the Empowered Whistleblower Podcast. Hello, and welcome to the Empowered Whistleblower Podcast. I'm your host, Dawn Westmoreland. Today's guest is a beautiful person inside and out. I met her, I want to say, about 3 years ago. We met on Facebook. She had seen some of the work that I was doing, and she asked me to be a co-author with The Strength of My Soul book, which was an anthology book. Her name is Sharon Jamison. Sharon has been teaching principles of love and self-empowerment for over 25 years. And she has been very busy with leadership training and developing her company specializing in personal transformational and relational healing. I'd like to bring on Sharon Jamison, who's a coach, a strategist, and definitely a mentor. Welcome, Sharon.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I am so excited to be here. So thank you so much, Dawn.
Oh, you're most welcome. I want to ask the why question. Why are you a visionary? Why are you a speaker? Why are you an author today?
You know, Dawn, I can say that the work that I do now is rooted in my childhood. I grew up in Missouri, and at that time, integration was the law of the land, but it was not definitely the love of the people. And we know that having a law means one thing, but having the love and the support of the people means something else. And so I remember going to school in Missouri and integrating the schools, and I was the only Black child in my classroom. And I had some very challenging experiences. I got beat up. I got spit on. My teacher hit me in the head with a chair. She thought I was attacking her. A couple of kids jumped on me and gave me a concussion. And so from the age of kindergarten to second grade, I experienced more pain in that 2 years than I probably have experienced during the rest of my life. And that experience, that pain changed who I was as a person. It changed my understanding of feeling safe. It made me feel inadequate. It made me feel worthless and shame. And even though that bullying happened, I would say for the first 10 years of my life, it took me the next 25 years of my life to recover. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, I am committed to helping people take a more leadership role in their lives, because even if they're not bullied by people, they are bullied by norms and stereotypes and labels and institutions. And so my goal is to help people stand in their power and to understand their power and understand that they deserve to operate in their full humanity. And so that's why I'm committed to my work.
Wow. And I feel so sad that what you went through, you know, being beat up, being mistreated, being labeled and judged, I mean, it's just so upsetting. But one thing I know is that a lot of people today who are great teachers and mentors, they have gone through abuse, whether it's mentally or physically or both, and you have learned to overcome this, but not only just be a survivor, you're a thriver. And I've heard you speak. You're a powerful speaker.
Oh, thank you. And I think one of the goals to me of any experience is to have the courage to extract the lesson and leave the baggage, which is very difficult. So my goal was, how can I extract the lessons of empowerment and resiliency and being tenacious and having the power to identify and define myself. How do I do that? And I could not do that alone, Don, honestly. It took a lot of therapy. It took a lot of support and love. And I think sometimes for us to transition from a place of feeling defeated and despair and deflated, it's a journey to understand your power and a journey to understand your worth. And sometimes you need other people to travel on that journey with you until you are clear about who you are so you can stand in that clarity and stand in that courage. So I that's why I think people are so powerful. It's because you're strengthened by your struggle. Mm-hmm. And you are crystallized, your character is crystallized by your struggle, and who you are is illuminated by your struggle. And that's why I think so many people who have suffered abuse, they have used that mental or emotional, sexual, financial, political abuse to advance not only their lives, but the lives of others. And so I feel gifted and honored to do this work, but I feel grateful for the people who helped me on this healing journey so that I can stand in my power and help other women and men go through the journey of healing themselves.
Yeah. And I have to say, Sharon, you are one of the most humble people and mentors that I know. There are a lot of coaches out there, a lot of people calling themselves mentors that are just full of the ego, but you are so far from that. I mean, you are just very humble. And I know I read all your different posts that you put out on social media and your videos, and you talk about the mistakes you've made, the struggles you've made, what you've learned, and you know, you're always so grateful. And that's something I really appreciate. So where are you sharing your message at the most these days?
Oh, wow. You know what is interesting? I think I'm a little bit of everywhere because even though it's the same message, I share it differently for different audiences. Mm-hmm. I share a lot in church because I'm a minister. So, for example, last Sunday I preached in Black History Month. So I did that. But I also share in the workforce with corporations, and I talk about diversity and leadership and how to walk in feminine power. So that's still a message around the power. And then I do a lot in my coaching programs. I do a lot of group coaching programs where people not only learn about their power, but they have a chance to practice using their power in the midst of other people. So I think it's kind of 30-30-30. And I love all of it because one of the blessings of doing this work, I get to take my spiritual life and put it in my professional life and take my professional life and bring it to my spiritual life, because I think it's a good blend. I think it's a good blend. I think business needs more spirituality and ethics and morals, but I also think the spirituality needs some business, because you cannot promote your platform if you don't have a good financial and systematic infrastructure. So I like to go back and forth, and it's very fulfilling, and I'm so grateful for the opportunity that people allow me in their corporations, in their churches, but also in their lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you stay busy. You have a regular career, and you also do all this leadership training and coaching. How do you manage and balance your life?
Can I tell you, my life is kind of not balanced most of the time. And I have decided just to let some things go. Like, for example, I'm not Miss Housekeeper, so everything is not tidy. I try to streamline my life. Like, I only wear like 3 colors ever, so everything always matches. So I cut all my hair off. You know, I looked at how can I manage my life so I can do what matters most to me. And but the good thing about it is everything is the same. It's in alignment, it's congruent. Mm-hmm. And so it even though I'm doing a lot of different things, it's the same message. Maybe I take out a scripture, or maybe I put in some other different word in leadership, but it's all around that same connecting with who you are. And to me, that's spirituality, because spirituality is just not church for me. It's just spirituality, because that spirituality is what helps you tap into your purpose, and your purpose is where you find fulfillment. And so it kind of all goes together. And yes, I have a very demanding job. I travel every week. I cover 5 states, mm-hmm. and I'm also a mom. And what I try to do is to keep a very consistent life. But I have to say, sometimes, Don, it's a lonely life sometimes, because to do all that I feel not only called to do, but compelled to do, you lose friends, because people cannot understand what it means to do what you do, but not being able to stop doing what you do. For example, I cannot stop writing. I wish I could, you know, but I'm downloading every day. Sometimes I'm downloading in my spirit every day. So I just keep writing. And if a person doesn't understand the difference between a career and a calling, and I have both, it makes it difficult. So it's a lonely life. It's a lonely journey sometimes. And my life is not really that organized. I have a lot of help. People help me, and I could never do what I do without the generosity and the genius of others.
Absolutely. And I know your son helps you some, and he's also done some work for me. He's fantastic.
Oh, thank you. You know what? You never really know the impact of your journey until you see your children. When I look at my son, you know, volunteering at the YMCA to help children, coach free kids. When I see him interact with people who are differently abled, mm-hmm. I know I did some things right. Yeah. And he didn't have a lot, you know, because it was he and I've always had multiple jobs. And so I'm excited that he feels that he must contribute to the world. I think sometimes in our culture, you see so many of the younger generation feel really entitled. And I always try to tell him, no, you're not entitled to anything. You have a gift, and your gift is to be given to serve not only yourself, but also humanity. And I love to see what he's doing. And sometimes I tell him about my history. I don't talk a lot about it because it makes him sad. And because I think because we still live together, he sees some of that sadness. Mm-hmm. And because some of that stuff never goes away. That's why I think the work that you do is so critical, Dawn, because the research shows that when kids are bullied, they deal with addiction, they deal with shame, they deal mm-hmm. with guilt, they get into cycles of abuse and cycles of worthlessness. I don't think that people appreciate when you make a child feel worthless. In their developmental years, they will spend a lifetime in recovery. So I celebrate your work that you're doing. I think it's so key to continue to help people understand the impact of bullying. So I honor you. I honor what you're doing. And you're going to help so many people step into their power and to remove the stigma of shame, because that's why people don't talk about it, because they feel embarrassed. So I honor what you're doing. I'm proud of you.
Oh, Sharon, thank you so much. And I don't believe that there are, you know, just things just happen. I think that the reason why we met 3 years ago is to work together at times, to support each other, lift each other, and to help people realize that if they need help, they've been bullied or discriminated, that there is help, that they can recover and not just survive. I don't want people to be another me too, although I celebrate that, you know, that journey and that mission. The thing is, it's not just important just to survive. It's important to thrive, because really the best thing in life is doing well and feeling well. Now, you talked about earlier about outgrowing people. We were talking before we started the interview about how we don't have some of the same friends and such. And that has to do with us working on our personal growth and seeing things differently. I know some of the people I used to hang out with in the past still have that victim mentality. And if we have that victim mentality, then we know we're not going to grow. What is your take on that, Sharon?
Right. I feel that you if you stay in victimhood, you can never progress to servanthood.
Mm.
And servanthood, I think, is where we all need to be, because I think we are all gifted with different gifts and talents and personalities and experiences to share with the world and to serve the world. And if we stay in victimhood, you can't make a transition to servanthood, because servanthood requires a sense of self. It requires a sense of purpose. It requires a sense of clarity and courage. And it is a very esteemed place. But I think people don't understand that when you are in victimhood, you are stuck in a sense of self-pity, and you can never move to being powerful until you go through the process of servanthood. Servanthood, to me, is the highest calling in life,
mm-hmm.
to serve other people, to serve God, to serve your own gifts, to serve your own family. And servanthood, to me, is a place of leadership. It's a place of discipline. It's a place of change. It's a place of being not only self-actualized, but self-activated. And victimhood, if you stick in victimhood, you live in this place of pain and punishment and oppression and repression. And not only do you live in a place of misery, but you invite others to live in that misery with you, or you bring misery everywhere you go. And so my goal is to work with people and to continue my own journey, because I still have victimization ways in my life that show up under pressure, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my goal is, how can I move from victimhood to servanthood, and how can I stay there in a way that makes me honor who I am and honor my own divinity and the divinity of others? And so that's my goal. How do you make that shift and stay there?
Mm-hmm.
And if we have some areas where we still act out as victims, and we all do, but the good thing about it, when you have some skills, you can identify it, and then you can rectify it, because that's the challenge. People can identify something. If you can't identify, you cannot rectify. But I think we all have some areas in our lives that we're still in process, right? We're still trying to move from a crowd consciousness to a God consciousness, and that's the journey that we're all are on.
Wow, some powerful words. Now, you were talking about writing. I know you like writing. You've written some really good books. You have a popular book called I Can Depend on Me. What is it about?
Yeah, I Can Depend on Me was about my journey. It was about my journey from being bullied to building myself back up. And it's the journey that starts from that experience I told you, I shared with you earlier in kindergarten, and how my life started to spiral down. Because who has, even as adults, none of us have all the tools to deal with bullying. Who has tools at 5 and 6 years old?
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened is, at 6 and 7 and 8, it was so much suffering. By the time I was 10, I had started using food to medicate myself. And so here I was, a 10-year-old weighing 150 pounds, because food was my way of relief. It was my rescue. It was my coping mechanism. And back then, we didn't know about the impact of bullying. You know, my parents said, shake it off. Well, I can't shake it off when I'm getting shaken up every day. And I ate and ate and ate. And during the course of the year, Don, it got so bad, I would gain and lose 40 and 50 pounds in a year. And I'm 9 and 10, 11 years old.
Wow.
Because it was traumatic. And so I talk about that book, talk about my journey. And the book stops when I'm in eighth grade. And it stops where we were moving away from Missouri to Phoenix. And I was and sometimes I think about the book, because I wrote it like 25 years ago, even though I just published it 5 years ago. And I cry for that little girl in that car, because here we were moving from Missouri to Phoenix. And in the book, I'm saying, oh God, I hope my life is going to be different in Phoenix. I hope they're going to like me. I hope I won't get beat up. Who says that in eighth grade, that you're moving and you hope that you won't be abused? And so when I read that book, I cry for that girl. I cry for that person who felt that way. I cry for my parents who now they get it, right? They didn't understand my suffering. And they, my mother and my father had to deal with their own guilt because they were teenage parents. They only did what they knew. So that book opened up a lot of wounds for my whole family. And I'm grateful that those wounds were open. Those wounds are still closing because I felt abandoned because I didn't understand. I'm like, wait a minute. Can't y'all see that my eyes busted? But I, however, that people do what they know. And I have to remember that my parents, you know, even though I was, my parents were only 18 years older than me and I was the second child. And so I'm just grateful for the experience. And so I stopped the book at an eighth grade. That's the last chapter. And then I, at the back of the book, I talk about the five strategies that I had to go through to help me heal. And I'm still a work in process, you know, because like I said earlier, you always think you're totally healed until you're triggered again. You're like, oh, there it goes again. I got some more work to do. Oh my God. Because you don't know where your wounds are, right? Because some of our woundedness is hidden in our souls. And we don't know it until somebody touches it. Like, oh, okay, that's still tender. And so I am always doing work. And even though I do this healing work and I'm an author and a minister and a life coach, I still go to therapy. Because you cannot do this work without having a safe place to share your thoughts. And also to continue to expose your pain. Because this is so interesting, and you probably feel this way too, Dawn. Your clients come in your life to show you you.
Yes.
So every time a client comes to my life, I see myself and I see my woundedness. But since I can't see it in me, they reflect it for me. And I'm like, oh, I got some more work to do. So I think even my clients who come to me, who allow me the privilege to step into their lives are blessings. And that's why I think every client is a gift. That's why I tell them thank you. They tell me thank you, but I tell them thank you because I think it's a mutual and reciprocal exchange, and I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, I've always learned from being a coach. You know, I've also been a hypnotist and such. And you talked about triggers. And I'm so glad you brought that up because a lot of people don't realize what you talked about, you know, with triggers is that, let's say somebody says something mean to you or something like that, and you get triggered all of a sudden, you're like, ah, you know, it makes you upset, mad, or something like that. Oftentimes, people don't realize they have to go back, way back, maybe into their childhood. Who treated that person bad to make them feel bad or, you know, have lack of confidence or self-worth or self-love. And when you realize that you're being triggered, that's the time that you have to start working on healing. And I know you do that kind of work as a coach. So tell me about, you know, if somebody comes to you and they've, you know, keep having triggers, you know, they don't have self-love for themselves, self-confidence or self-respect. How do you help them as a coach?
Yeah, good question. One of the things I do, I try to customize my coaching because people handle the truth differently. Because I believe that people don't have problems, they have patterns. And your patterns create your problems. And what I do, I take a journey back to into try to start dissecting and delayering some of the pain, because people are great at covering up their pain. People are great at denial and avoidance. They are masters at stuffing their stuff. That sometimes we have to keep pulling layer after layer after layer after layer, because sometimes it hurts to tell yourself the truth. But I ask people to walk backwards into that journey, because you can't go forward without looking backward, and try to start pinpointing consistencies in their behavior, because it's patterns. Your patterns will reveal that where the crack is. And so I talk to people about their lives, about their histories. I talk to people about their failures, but also I also tell them about their strengths, because some people, we always think that only our trouble challenges us. Sometimes people have successes that they feel that they're not entitled to, or they feel guilty because they're the successful one in their family. So I think you have to look at the bad and good, because even though something we might on the outside think is good, it might be traumatizing to them. So I really ask, I try to find out where the pain exists. And like you said, sometimes it's something in, you know, when they were younger. And it's one of those, I would say, processes that is so customized, because what you don't want to do, Don, I know you probably see this in your work, you want to help them identify the issue without paralyzing them. And when people are in pain, there's a fine balance between identification and immobilization. And I don't want people to be immobilized because they realize something and they shut down. And I'm sure you probably experienced the same thing. And so I just keep asking questions gently. And I think coaching is all about asking the right questions. I think it's about wisdom. And that's why sometimes people say, oh, I went to a class, I'm ready to coach. But I think coaching is not only technical, but it's intuitive. And that's why I don't think you can do this work without having some type of spiritual discipline, because you'll miss cues. Your mind might miss cues, but your spirit will catch it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Your
absolutely.
Spirit will catch it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I think that to be on this journey, to be a mentor or coach, you have to be on your own journey, because you won't be able to identify how to hear with your ears, your head, your heart, and your soul. You got to hear a whole bunch of different ways if you're going to really help people on this journey of healing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm glad you talked about intuition, because, and also open-ended questions. Well, I'm telling you, open-ended questions. When somebody comes to you as a coach, usually if somebody comes to you as a coach, I'm saying this to the listeners, you know, we ask questions that are open-ended, meaning that it's not a yes or no question, because sometimes people would just say yes or no and not go on. But I think intuition does play a great part in coaching and mentoring and anything in our lives, is having a sense of, you know, it's kind of like you're channeling, you know, knowing what to ask your client. And I've had clients say, how did you know that? I've never told anybody this, or I've never opened up. So how do you use your intuition when you're working with people?
Great question. I use the intuition to, like you said, ask the questions and to help them with revelation, because you can never have a new reality without a new revelation. And by asking a question, and I sense it. I can't explain intuition. I sense it. But see, this is what I know. Intuition, insight, and initiative, all of that is in. It's spiritual, right? Intuitive. It's all of that is spiritual. And I sometimes I don't know how I know, but I know. And that's why I know it's a spirit. It's just a spirit. I can't explain it. And it's kind of like sometimes, Don, you probably have done this too. When you are speaking in front of a group and you start speaking and you're like, how did I know that? You don't know how you knew that. Like sometimes I use words that I've never seen before. And I'm like, is that a word? Let me look that word up. And it's a word, right?
Yeah.
But this is what I know, that we're all a part of this collective mind. And I believe that when we put ourselves in positions to be conduits and healers, we have to surrender. And things come out of us that we are shocked. Sometimes I preach and I hear the and I listen to it. I'm like, and that wasn't in my notes, you know. But now I just surrender to it, because I feel like even though we have an agenda and we know the questions, when you allow yourself to be a vessel and a conduit, you are opening yourself up to miracles. And so I think intuition and initiative and instinct are all spiritually based abilities that none of us can really understand. We're just glad we have it, right? I'm just glad I have it.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but I'm glad I have it. And I regret when I don't follow it. That's why I've learned to trust it. Mm-hmm. When I was a little girl, about my instinct, when you're being bullied, I had to use my instinct. Because if not, I would have probably been dead by now. I had to use my instinct to say, okay, Sharon, don't go here. Sharon, wait to get on the bus last. Sharon, don't go to recess. They're going to beat you up. And I don't know how I got that. But something used to speak to me to say, don't do something. Now, when I violated, that's when I got the concussion. You see what I'm saying? And I was like, second grade.
Wow.
So I started honing that skill. And that's something that I even tell people as they get are older in the workplace and they're getting bullied. Listen to that voice.
Yep.
Because that voice will help you navigate the maze of life. It will help you navigate toxic situations. It will help you navigate places in the workplace that are toxic to your spirit. But you gotta listen and move. And so that's the challenge. Sometimes we hear, but we won't heed. And I think I've had so many times when I got it wrong because I heard and I wouldn't heed. Now mm-hmm. I just do it, and I don't care if I don't understand it. I just say, you know what? This is what I'm feeling, because it's not a feeling. Let me just say that too. Intuition is greater than just a feeling. It's a hunch. It's a feeling, but it's a quietness. It's an assurance all mixed together. And that's why it's important to heed it and move on it. And now, and when you trust it, you'll make better decisions in not only in business, but in the workforce. Because every business decision that I made that I did not heed my intuition, it messed me up. Everyone, even with the anthologies that I have done, where I said, this is the wrong person, I didn't change it. And I live to regret it. So it's really interesting to what I would tell people who have been bullied as a child, as a parent, help your child learn to trust their intuition, not their fear, but their intuition, because that's our sixth sense. And I think that we always tell when our kids come home and say, Mom, this happened. We're like, oh, that didn't happen. Versus saying, sweetie, tell me more. How did you know that? And so if we teach especially our daughters, to trust their own intuition, I think that we will equip our children to navigate smoother and more, what's the word, with more confidence and more courage in the world.
Mm. Perfect advice. Yeah, I have to second that. Every time I've had a strong feeling, don't work with this person, don't hire this person, don't do this, don't do that. And sometimes I've ignored that intuition, and every time it has bit me in the backside. It is so important, and we all have intuition. And the thing is, I know we've talked, Sharon, you know, we're both strong people, but we're also sensitive people. And I think that's very important because of the work that we do. So I want to talk about the book that The Strength of My Soul, which is Stories of Sisterhood, Triumph, and Inspiration. What inspired you to do an anthology?
Yeah, that was my first one. I have a couple more coming out that I'm doing. What inspired me was understanding the power of different voices and understanding that we're all connected and knowing that we all have different pieces of this collective puzzle, and that piece that you need, Don, I might have, and a piece that I need that you might have.
Mm-hmm.
And when you understand that we're all connected to each other and we all have stories, we all have places of triumph, what you will find is that what made us strong was the strength in our souls. And I wanted to have a book where every type of person was represented. I wanted Black, white, brown, straight, gay, bisexual, old, young, differently abled, GED, PhD, all different walks of life.
Mm-hmm.
And it was important that I put our pictures on the front so that people can see who we are and that we're different, but we're still a part of this wonderful fabric called humanity. And so I wanted to share the stories. I felt led to do it. I don't know how I felt. That's another thing. I don't know how I felt led to do that. But I trusted God. I trusted God. And I'm always watching people. And that's where I saw some of your posts and said, you know what? I want to meet her. It was something about your story, something about your presentation, something about what you exuded that I said, you know what? I want her to be a writer. Now, how did I know? I don't know. You know? Now. And let me just, it's interesting with this, Dawn. When I chose from my heart, it was the right thing. When I chose from my head, I made mistakes.
I get that.
And and so that was why the second book, The Strength of My Soul Part Two, I'm gonna start selecting people because I want to have a different type of book. And then I'm doing this other book with people over 70 called Lessons from My Elders.
Awesome.
I preach the sermons on Sunday called Lessons from My Elders because I think we are always looking, everybody is searching for answers.
Sure.
But the wisdom that we need is our elders have it because our elders have endured, you know, slavery and segregation and Jim Crow and World War II and concentration camps. There's so much wisdom that I think that we need to incorporate in our lives today because there's nothing new under the sun. But there's something about elders who have lived through tragedy, trauma, and tribulation that we need to reach to because they have learned a lot of lessons that I think we need to incorporate in our lives. And so that just hit me to do that Sunday. After my sermon, I said, you know what, I'm going to have an anthology. And so now I'm looking at people who are 70 plus, all different races, to share their stories because I want to honor the wisdom of our elders and to make sure that those people who are 70 and 80, some of them are two generations away from slavery, right? One generation from Jim Crow, one generation from segregation, two generations from the Holocaust, one or two generations from Japanese camps, one or two or three generations from the reservation. What happened?
Mm-hmm.
And how can we use that wisdom and tell our youth? Because we don't want those lessons to get lost because then we will leave a generation and generations to come without the wisdom they need to survive. And so I'm excited about that book too.
Gosh, I can't wait to hear that. And I want to go back to The Strength of My Soul. You did, thanks to you, it won an Indie Literary Award for Best Anthology of the Year. That was a big deal. Yeah.
Yes, it was a big deal. And that's when you know you're doing what God has called you to do. Because we didn't start doing that. You know, we didn't say, hey, let's win this award. Hey, let's become a bestseller. We didn't start that. And I'm always shocked that that book has been in, I hear emails from people in Mexico and you know, Africa and Brazil. I'm like, huh? How did y'all get the book over there? You know, you never know who's reading your book. And even, and that's too something I learned too, Dawn, that even though something is not a commercial success, it doesn't mean that it's not successful. Because I was really at one point sad because I believe that The Strength of Myself should have been more successful commercially, and it wasn't. And I felt at a point really sad about that, you know, honestly. But then God had to deal with me with that because to let me know that everything that is prophetic is not popular.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people are more popular in death, you know? So I have to know that we are planting seeds. And even though it was not a commercial success, how people define it, you know, I'm talking about, you know, we were an Amazon bestseller. I'm talking about a New York bestseller. I still think that book was successful. I think we started something. I think that the fruit of that a book might not even blow up until after book two and book three, because that's what happened after that. Sometimes, you know, even Chicken Soup for the Soul, the second one wasn't successful, but happens after it caught on, it went back, and then the first and second was successful. And I'm just trusting God that that will continue to happen. Yeah,
that makes sense. Absolutely makes sense. And you know, last year I was in Sedona at a spiritual conference, and I remember somebody talking about, instead of trying to be a number one bestseller, New York's bestseller, whatever, why don't you just try to serve the people and help millions or thousands of people? And that really struck a chord in me because we all want to be our very best, but sometimes we never hear back. But by the posts that you put out, the books you put out, the podcast you put out, you never know who you're helping and whose lives you're saving or who you're empowering. So what's next for you? What are you going to be doing in the next year or two? What's your next goals?
A couple of things. Well, something I always wanted to do that, but I was too scared to do it, I did it. I always want to have a talk show, right?
Awesome.
And so I started a series on Facebook Live called Soaring with Sharon. And our first one had like 500 viewers. The second one had like 5,300. So I do it every other Sunday, and I'm really excited about that. I have a new book coming out in June called Deciding to Soar 2, which is based on some of my posts, and I'm really excited about that. It's going to be 180 days lessons. Deciding to Soar, the first one was successful. I'm like, well, let me do this again. So that comes out on my birthday, July 10th. I have another book coming out in November called The 50 Life Choices to a Better Life that I'm working on with my dad. And I'm really, really excited with that. My dad is a minister. He wrote the foreword to my book, I've Learned a Few Things. And he's just a powerful speaker. And then next year, 2019, I will have Strength of My Soul Part 2, The Lessons from My Elders that will come out Black History Month next year in February. And I am speaking a lot. I have a couple of coaching programs that I'm really, really happy about. I do a coaching program based on my book, I Can Depend on Me. It's called You Can Depend on You, which is a 4-week online series. I start a new program in April called Dare to Be Me, which really talks about how to walk in your courage. I'm excited about that. And I have a couple of masterminds that I'm one of the speakers for with other groups, because this is what I know. I like to do my own stuff, but I like collaboration. And because I believe everybody has a piece of the puzzle, and that's why I always do both simultaneously. I'm part of an anthology called I Bare My Chest that comes out next week. And oh, wow. We are raising $1 million for women's charities across the world. It's called I Bare My Chest, and it's anthology 21 women. We live on 7 different continents. Mm-hmm. All different races. Oh, it's just amazing. And so I'm excited about that. That comes out. So I am going to continue to do what I feel called to do. And will I be in balance in 2018? Maybe not. I'm okay not being in balance when I'm feeling fulfilled, because when you're doing what you love, it doesn't feel like work. I used to hear that adage a lot, and I never believed it, but now I know it's true. So yes, I work a lot, and yes, but it doesn't feel like work because I'm just sharing within my heart. People are asking me like, well, Sharon, when you get on Facebook Live, you know, how do you know what you're going to talk about? That's kind of who I am. I just like, okay, I'm going to talk about this, and I just talk, and then I look up to 20 minutes. I'm like, Sharon, get off Facebook Live. But the thing is, I read every day. So the thing is, I read like a book a week. I don't know, and because I read when I work out. So I always have this stuff that I want to share, and I just feel compelled to do it. And I'm grateful that I'm not so self-conscious because people, you know, people always say, oh, Sharon, you're just full of yourself. And so just know, Don, I get just as much support from people. I get enough of the same criticism. But something that T.D. Jakes said, I will never forget. He said that if you are going to listen to your critics, you don't deserve, you're not qualified to lead. And ooh. I never forgot that.
And I do love him.
And then he also, yes, I love him. And then he also said that if you are going to be an eagle, don't worry about what the chickens say. And so even when, and I believe I want an eagle, that's why I dare to hire the eagle. So do I get moved? Yes. Do my feelings get hurt sometimes? Yes. Mm-hmm. But however, I always know that the promise and the purpose is more powerful than the temporary pain, because the pain is temporary, right? And I'm just grateful to be used as a vessel. And I know if I need people, I have people like you that can remind me to keep doing what I'm doing. Because sometimes I feel like quitting. I think you probably do too. But we always are surrounded by a cloud of witnesses that remind us that we're making a difference. And so that's why I'm glad that you're in my life. I'm so glad that you allowed me to be on your show. And if people go to my website, www.sharonjameson.com, if they sign up, I have a free gift that talks about the importance of communication, because I think that's why people are bullied so often, because it's hard to find your voice. And after you find your voice, it's hard to hear your voice say what you need to say. And so I hope people will go and connect with me on social media and also buy my books and attend my events and by all the anthologies that I'm part of, because, like I said, there's so many powerful people out there doing great work, and hopefully take a part of my coaching program so I can work with them one-on-one. So, I mean, as a group, I'm not doing a lot of one-on-one anymore, Don. I do a couple of VIP sessions, but I love the groups because we grow in groups. We live in community. So it's best when you have people who can practice their new skills and apply the new skills with others. And so I'm grateful for all that of God is going to give me. And I know that 2018 is going to be a year of change for me. I don't know what that means, but I'm open to it. I surrendered to knowing that 2018 is going to be a year of great manifestation of God in my life. And so I'm just open to it. Whatever it needs to look like, I'm open.
Well, you are a powerful woman, and I hope that the listeners out there that are needing help, and especially the kind of support that you can give them, that they will reach out to you. So the best way to get a hold of you is SharonJameson.com.
Yes, SharonJameson.com, or they can email me at Sharon@SharonJameson.com. But but everything, Instagram, Twitter, what's the other one? Facebook. YouTube, everything is by name. And what I do is I download my face. If they're not on Facebook, I download my Facebook lives and put them on YouTube, because some people are not Facebook people. And so, and then get on my mailing list, because what I do, I try to, every Tuesday, I send out some type of words of encouragement or video or something, because I want to stay connected with people. And so I would love for people, when they sign up for my free gift, they will sign up also for my to be on my mailing list so I can share information. And I just don't share my stuff. I share other people's stuff too, because I feel like, again, everybody has a piece of the puzzle. And even though my piece, I think, is something important, there are so many other pieces that are equally as important. And I want people to connect with me so I can help them connect with others.
Great. And I just want to share, as I'm wrapping up, that I am so grateful that you are on this interview today. I've learned a lot about you, where you're going. And so to our listeners, reach out to Sharon Jameson, and the information will also, contact information will also be on the website. So we're ending this show, and I want to say to stay empowered. And I'd like to use the words of a mentor that I have. You know, when we are doing our soul's purpose, the right people, the right connections, the right resources appear. Everyone have an empowering day. Thank you for listening to the Empowered Whistleblower. As your host, I will continue to bring in the best experts to share their knowledge and empower our listeners. Nobody has to feel like a victim. There are solutions to bullying and discrimination. Everyone deserves to be treated with respect and dignity. All our future shows will offer practical guidance so that anyone can choose to stand up to bullying and discrimination. You deserve to be happy, and life is all about choices. I always welcome comments and suggestions for new shows. Please comment and share your ideas, and be sure to come back for more inspiration and empowerment. I am Dawn Marie Westmoreland signing off and wishing you much happiness and empowerment in your day.